The preocular tear film, POTF, is an important measure of the health of the surface of the eye. There are a number of pre-existing techniques for the assessment of the POTF, and one of the less known is the tear ferning test. This differs from other methods as it evaluates the composition of tears. The reasons for the different patterns of crystallization and ferning that result are not fully understood, but research is ongoing in the area. Here, Helen Tilley talks to Dr. Christine Perslow of the School of Optometry and Visual Sciences at the University of Cardiff about tear ferning and its application in research and clinical diagnosis.
I know you've done a lot of research into dry eyes and contact lenses in your career. Can you remind us why the tear film composition should be taken more seriously?
Yeah, tear film, I think we underestimate it largely in our work. We all look at it every day on the slit lamp, but we don't really make any more note than, you know, it's a bit smeary or a bit greasy. And we sometimes lose sight of the fact that actually if that tear film wasn't there, the best refraction in the world isn't going to help the patient see clearly and be comfortable in their vision. Okay. So I think looking at the tear film is something we all do, but perhaps largely take for granted.
And how would a practitioner judge the tear film composition?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting, because actually when we look at it, you and I look down the slit lamp, we see debris floating about, a bit of makeup, and we make a judgment, but that's about all we can do, really. We can't sample it and take it away and look at the chemical constitution of it. So beyond that, this is where tear ferning comes in, really, because it's the only test that we could put in the consulting room which would actually tell us something about the composition of the tear film.
Could you describe what tear ferning is?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that, you know, you haven't heard of it before, because it sounds a bit mad, doesn't it? But it is as simple as it sounds. It's where you take a sample of tears and you allow it to dry on a glass microscope slide in about 10 minutes and you'll see the fluid will evaporate off. And the pattern that's left behind is quite characteristic, depending on what's in the tears, really. So, it's not such a mad idea. It's used in medicine generally, and its first use was back in the 40s and 50s, when actually they used it to look at cervical mucus to detect ovulation. So it was actually used medically even back then. But it didn't receive much attention for the tears or saliva until about the 80s. And then people started taking samples from the fornix and looking at them on a microscope and deciding that they looked different depending on the type of eye that you took the sample from.
And that would be easy to do in practice, would it?
Yes, we've moved on. The early work in the 80s where they took scrapings from the fornix, and because they thought it was to do with the mucins in the tear film and mucus. And at one time it was called mucus ferning. But we've now moved on and we know that if we just take a fluid sample from the meniscus and allow just maybe 1 or 2 microliters of that to dry on a microscope slide, you can see the pattern that you need to see. So in your consulting room, if you had glass capillaries, and of course your slit lamp is a microscope, albeit on its side, and you've got some glass microscope slides, you have all the equipment and the expertise. We're all dexterous with our hands. I'm sure we can all take a tear sample. You could look on a microscope slide and see these patterns.
Okay. Why is tear film stability an important indicator of eye health?
Well, tear film, as you know, is filled with proteins, mucins, various electrolytes. So we talk about it being salty tears, but we know it's a bit more than that. There's potassium, calcium, magnesium, sodium. Okay. And the different patterns you see, the exact reason why you see this pattern or that pattern, there's a little bit of debate still in the literature about what forms the patterns. But there's general agreement that it's the ratio or the balance between the big molecules, the proteins and the mucins, and the electrolytes, the salts. And when those are altered, you get different patterns. And so if you look at people with dry eye, they have a very different pattern to somebody with normal tears. And if you look at people who are tolerant of contact lenses, they have a very different pattern to those who are intolerant. So you start to see it as being a diagnostic test or a monitoring test to use in practice.
And would you have to see a lot of these tear ferning patterns to understand and compare them?
No, well, thankfully, when the first serious work was done in this in the 80s, one of the seminal pieces of work was to develop a grading scale. And we're familiar with grading scales for ocular redness and staining. Yeah, sure. And there is one for Ferning, and it's got four pictures. And it's called the Rolando grading scale after its inventor. And grade one and two are considered normal, and three and four are usually what we would get from a dry eye or an intolerant contact lens wearer.
Where would you get hold of one of these?
You can take it straight from their publications. You can download it off the net. And here at Cardiff, we've done quite a bit of work to look at whether that grading scale could be improved. And we have a Cardiff scale that has five pictures on it, which gives you a little bit more scope. But it means that you can take a sample from your patient and give it a grade. And then, of course, if you choose to perhaps treat them with dry eye drops or something like that, you can come back to that grade later and do it again.
Where did tear ferning originate from?
Well, it was those origins in just general medicine, where they discovered that many bodily fluids will present with this phenomenon of ferning. But cervical mucus was the one that received a lot of attention to do with ovulation. And saliva has been looked at as well. Saliva will behave in the same way. But it's generally now the focus is on tears, really. And the reason you won't see it in clinical practice as yet is it has been more of a research tool.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Do you know of anybody using it in clinical practice currently?
I know of one or two practitioners who are really into dry eye, because it's quite difficult, isn't it, when you see
a patient
with dry eye. By and large, you're going on the symptoms. And we know that symptoms and signs don't always match up. So it's nice to have something else to be actually say, yes, I understand why you've got dry eye. And we know that hyperosmolarity of the tear film is the gold standard marker, really, for dry eye. And that's where you've got an increased electrolyte concentration. And that's related to ferning then. Now, to measure osmolarity of the tear film in clinical practice is really difficult. There is a device on the market that will do that, but it's not widely available. And it's quite expensive. So in some ways, tear ferning, the research is starting to show that it's emerging as really the simple alternative
to biochemistry. And I assume it's quite cheap too.
Yeah.
To do in the practice.
Glass microscope slides, glass capillaries, and a steady hand and a slit lamp.
And which disorders is tear ferning particularly useful in diagnosing?
Well, many of the publications concentrate on keratoconjunctivitis sicca because they've largely been based around ophthalmology. So your really severe dry eye, definitely, ferning has been shown to be very sensitive and very specific as a test for that. But there's some interesting papers that look at contact lens wearers and the idea that people who are less tolerant to contact lenses 6 months after they've been fitted, say, have a very different ferning pattern to those that seem to be successful. So it's clearly telling us something about the tears that we can't get from any other typical tests that we use.
Is there a consensus on the reasons behind the different patterns that you see in tear ferning and how you interpret them?
Yes, Rolando's work with his grading scale was followed up by a few other authors who came up with their own variations on that scale. But as recently as 2008, I think it was, somebody looked at his scale again for the sensitivity and the specificity of it and found that it was very good. So in other words, it did what it said it was supposed to do. You could apply the test to different groups of people and it would tell them apart.
And are there advantages for tear ferning over other tests for POTF?
Well, POTF, preocular tear film stability, is something that we all look at. But it's very hard to put a number on it. You can count seconds and you can look at stability. But we all know that we've got patients who have very stable tear films but have lots of symptoms. And we have patients that have, you know, very unstable tear films and seem very happy. So we know that the signs and the symptoms of lots of tests don't always add up. You know, you can have lots of staining and no symptoms and very little staining and lots of symptoms. And so we keep striving to find new tests that possibly match up a bit better with what we expect. Now, ferning, it still remains to be seen whether it's a good indicator that matches with symptoms. That work isn't complete yet.
And I assume also how to treat what you see on the slides as well. Still work to be done on that?
That's right. And it's interesting, you can take artificial teardrops, you know, that we prescribe for our patients, and some of them will demonstrate a ferning pattern like human tears, and some of them won't. but we're not quite sure what that means, whether that's just to do with the constituents of the recipe from the manufacturer, or whether it actually is important that a product does.
But I assume as more work's done into this, we're going to be...
Yeah, that remains to be done, yeah.
Is the tear ferning used in ophthalmology in hospitals currently?
Not that I know of. I think it's still really a research tool as far as ophthalmology is concerned. So they're using it in small pockets. You know, some ophthalmologists are aware of the test. But ophthalmology still tends to use a lot of Schirmer strips, and you still see those publications really for ophthalmology.
Right. Well, it sounds like tear ferning would be a really useful technique to use in our optometric practices, and I look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks to Helen and Christine. As with all other OQ interviews, further information can be found on the OQ webpage, the Docket app, or your CD insert.